Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. That is Mike. How are you tonight, Mike?
I am wonderful, Dan, because we are recording this on the opening night of the new NHL season. And
yes.
Breaking news, Connor Bedard took warm-ups without a helmet on. And everybody now gets 50% off at Tim Hortons tomorrow or something because Canada is losing its mind that this guy... did something so cool and hip to grow the game.
Yeah, this will definitely be on postage stamps later on, and a new holiday is formed. You don't see that every day. So, it's exciting. Actual hockey is on now, and we are here to talk about Islanders of the past, as our favorite thing to do is. And we're here with one of our all-time favorites. I don't even need to introduce this man. You know him. You love him. We love him. He's our good friend, Arthur Staple of The Athletic. And right now, as of this recording, you are actually back on the Islanders beat. How exciting is that for you?
I think it's appropriate, guys, that you're talking about old weird Islanders because now you have an old weird Islander beat writer to go along with it. So it's a perfect match at this point.
I guess so, yes.
I'm trying to think of what player you are who went went away and then came back.
Claw the point,
Claw the point. Yeah.
Blue guy played a lot.
Kit
of
Miller. We've had
zero impact. Yeah,
I think Kit Miller works because you did Newsday and then The Athletic at the Islanders, and now you're back with them again for a third stint. So
there you go. I was gonna say Matt Martin because you went to another team and was like, oh no, this isn't good, and then you came back.
Fought with a lot of people at the other team.
Now. Absolutely. I mean, how does it feel to be back in that locker room? I'm sure the players were like, do we know you? Like that kind of thing. Or,
I have to say, thanks to Lou Lamoriello's commitment to consistency, it was a very familiar homecoming because I know about 90% of the guys on the team. So there was a lot of, you know, the Spider-Man meme type stuff pointing like, you're still here? And it's like, what are you doing here? So it is nice. And I think... you know, the Rangers, obviously, a little bit more media, a little bit more corporate in how they handle their situations. And even in the Lou Lamoriello era, it still always feels like a little bit more like home, you know, knowing everybody from equipment guys to trainers to front office, you know, assistants and people who answer the phones. It's a nice environment if you've been around it a lot. You know, the Islanders have gone through a lot of weirdness in my decade or so of covering them, but it's still nice to see people you know well and you know, people who you saw start as interns and get married and get into big jobs and stuff like that. So it's fun. It's always fun to be there.
Cool. Very cool. A couple of days before the season started, you posted your predictions on Twitter as you always do. And you actually had the Islanders and Leafs hooking up in the first round of the playoffs. So my question to you, two questions. One, why would you do that? And two, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you write that? My God.
Dan, you've been a journalist for a long time. You know, Root for Chaos is written over the door to the locker room of every beat writer. Yes. So
that is true.
I didn't think I could wrangle a Rangers Islanders first round because I don't think either of them would be good enough to do that. So this was my next best choice. And I think that would be amazing. You know, to see a playoff game at UBS with John Tavares in a visiting uniform and you know, just the like, even if the Islanders lose, I don't think the fans would care. It would just be so almost as cathartic as his homecoming a few years ago was for Islander fans. I think I'd have to, you know, we'd all have to bring bail money for Leboff because I don't know if he'd get out of there without something bad happening.
Well, but, I will decamp for Europe if that happens. So you're on your own. I'm not going to be here. Get it from someplace else. That would be bad. But that is a perfect segue that you did that to tonight's Weird Islanders, because the guys that we're going to talk about, and it's going to be a couple of guys, all came over in a trade from the Maple Leafs before the whole Tavares thing happened. So we got a lot of guys to discuss. So let's get right into it. Arthur Staple, will you please reveal the subjects of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
It's the quintet of minor leaguers that Garth Snow got for Michael Grabner. So I was driving on the Northern State away from training camp. Got the call that Michael Grabner, who would come off a couple of down years after coming out great in his first couple seasons as an Islander, was traded to the Leafs for 5 minor leaguers. And when the names were recited off to me on the phone by the Islanders PR guy, Taylor Beck, goalie Christopher Gibson, Matt Finn, Tom Nielsen, and the guy who's probably the best known now, but really was not then, Carter Verhaeghe, it sure seemed like the Islanders were just kind of getting some warm bodies and seeing if they could win a lottery ticket with one of these 5 guys. And the answer was no, they did not win a lottery ticket with any of the 5. But it wasn't as crazy a trade as it seemed at the time, because Grabner, like I said, had been a little bit in decline. He was hurt much of the previous year. I think it was double hernia surgery that he had in the off season. So it was a wild one. You don't see a lot of 5-for-1s, and not like usually it's draft picks. That's the commodity, but Garth Snow went for bodies, and they all had some time in the organization, some slightly more successful than others, but it was a weird one, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
It felt like they were up to something. That was my first reaction to this trade was, are the Islanders like committing a crime here? Are they like laundering? Are they laundering something? Like, what's going on? And it feels like the Islanders, especially back then, they really operated on the fringes of the CBA. Yes. So I think that this was like a 50 contract limit thing, help the Leafs almost situation as well.
Definitely.
And that was Garth Snow's sweet spot, was helping like trying to get almost like get paid off by helping other teams out of like dicey situations. Like that, and it led to a kind of a reckoning for Michael Grabner's Islander career, which, like you said, was very, there was a really, really, really high, and then it just sputtered out, because he was just awesome to watch in that first rookie season.
Yeah, and you know, obviously needing hernia surgery for a guy who's, you know, his game was so completely reliant on his speed. You could certainly see the decline, you know, certainly that incredibly disappointing 13-14 year where he had almost no impact. And then 14-15, when, you know, as the three of us have discussed either on a podcast or just in general, probably one of the most talented Islander teams of the last 20 years, that 14-15 team. And Grabner was such a non-factor that year. He clearly... Yeah. Was laboring a little bit, kind of fell out of favor because they had some new kids like Ryan Strome. You know, it just it was shocking to see because he seemed like he was, you know, especially in the surprise 2013 playoff run, he had a decent impact in that series against the Penguins. So it was not a great ending for him with the Islanders, and it was not a great season in Toronto for him. And you know, he kind of seemed a little bit, you know, maybe that was it for him. Of course, you know, a year or two later, he resurfaced with the Rangers and completely resurrected his career, which is probably not what a lot of people wanted to see or hear. But, you know, it was, and then, you know, kind of prolonged his career by about 3 or 4 years where he had, you know, some, he had the bad eye injury out in Arizona, but still managed to have somewhat of an impact there towards the end of his career. And now he's out in Arizona playing the role of elder statesman, doing a little development work with the Coyotes. I think Logan Cooley, their star rookie, is living with the Grabners. It's knowing Michael as I did as a rookie or early on in his career, where he was, you know, his nickname was the Gremlin. He was he was a high strung, nervous guy, kind of funny, a little bit awkward. Maybe a little bit immature, and now thinking about him hosting a young kid in his house with his family, it's kind of a nice bow to put on it. And certainly that trade was maybe the low point of his time with the Islanders.
Yeah, I think Islanders fans liked Devils Michael Grabner and Coyotes Michael Grabner, but not so much Rangers Michael Grabner.
No.
I remember being like, "Oh, come on, really with this guy?" But yeah, there was a time. There was a space of time there. He just kind of disappeared. And then he just showed up all of a sudden. It's like, wait, this guy, but I guess that's what it took to get healthy. Before we move on to the actual Weird Islanders, because Michael Grabner is not a Weird Islander. Before we move on to the other Weird Islanders here, a reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you can get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, early access, written posts, all kinds of stuff. So sign up today, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. So like you said, Grabner was traded for five guys, which is like almost an NBA type deal. You know, you expect like a Chris Paul or somebody to get traded for five guys. Most hockey players don't get traded for five guys. And I found the video of, I guess, Leafs TV talking about this trade. And they seem to be of the mind that, oh my God, the Leafs gave up so much for Michael Grabner. And you look at the names and you're like, really? This is too much? Was this really too much for this guy?
Michael Grabner from the New York Islanders will be coming over to the Toronto Maple Leafs just in time for training camp and a trip to Halifax as well, in exchange for forwards Taylor Beck, Carter Verhaeghe, and defensemen's Matt Finn and Tom Nielsen, and goaltender Christopher Gibson. That wow. is a whole lot going the other way for Michael Grabner here, and there we take a look at his numbers. And
was that the feeling that maybe you had or maybe people had at the time, which is sort of like, I mean, Mike said it seems like something is up. You thought that maybe there was just like a warm bodies for a, you know, guy who might have some upside. Was there a feeling that the Islanders had kind of fleeced the Leafs here, or was it just Leafs people talking about losing Leafs guys?
You know, I think part of it was helping the Leafs out of a 50 contract maximum jam, and their GM, of course, Lou Lamoriello, who's very tight with Garth Snow. you know, the Leafs were kind of starting to emerge as a playoff team there with Matthews and Mitch Marner, and you know, in a couple of years, John Tavares. But they, you know, they were they became a playoff team around that time. And, you know, I think for the Islanders, one of Garth Snow's big things, whether you go all the way back to, you know, the lockout shortened season with claiming a million guys on waivers, several of whom played several hundred games for the Islanders, right. or just, you know, I think being in that environment with Charles Wong as the owner and Garth understanding who his owner is and how they operate, it was just, let's get a fistful of Powerball tickets and we'll see if we can win one. And, you know, there was a goalie, there was a couple of forwards that were, you know, so at least one of them, you know, I think when you look back at it, you know, the guys that were, I'm trying to remember, I think the guys that they were the most intrigued by were Taylor Beck, who was, you know, a pretty high draft pick and had just come off a season in Nashville where he played 60 games and produced a little bit as a bottom sixer, still a young guy. And Christopher Gibson, who, you know, was a pretty high Kings draft pick. He was essentially the number one goalie for the Toronto Marlies the year before, but really not a lot of room there to move up through the Leafs organization. but still also a young guy who had a decent amount of experience. And, you know, the Islanders had Yaro Halak and they had Thomas Greiss, but they didn't really have anybody that was coming up through the system yet. So those were kind of the two guys that you were focused on. And everybody else just kind of rounding it out and seeing if you could get, you know, you had Matt Finn, who had been a second round pick of the Leafs a few years earlier. So he's a minor leaguer. Tom Nilsson, who was still in Sweden and would never leave Sweden. But, you know, and then Carter Verhaeghe, who was another decently high pick who just hadn't seemed to pan out, really. He was kind of just starting his pro career. He had a really good last junior year, I believe, in Niagara in the Ontario League. And just, you know, another guy who was a throw-in. And you think about a 40-goal scorer in the NHL now who was a throw-in there. And obviously that's the one that people fixate on. But we can talk more about him and how that wasn't really just an Islanders failing with him.
No.
But it really was, I think, Beck and Gibson were really the guys that you focused on and said, okay, these, you know, we got a guy that could play a fourth-line role and a guy who could eventually be a number two goalie for us. Then we're getting something, you know, with a guy in Grabner that they weren't going to bring back. It was last year of his contract. And, you know, they were kind of like, okay, it's something essentially for nothing because Grabner wasn't really in their plans even for that season.
And I just trusted that one of them was going to click because it did seem like snow. I mean, that 2013 season, like you mentioned, I guess Joe Finley was the only one who like didn't really work out that they kind of brought in from the scrap heap, but everybody else, like, when I'm saying work out, it's modest. I'm talking about like modest success, but like Keith O'Coin obviously was really good for them. And
I mean, Thomas Hickey was the big,
Hickey
big fish from that.
Exactly.
Hole,
Hickey's still around.
Brian Strait was a guy who didn't play a ton that season, but played a pretty big role. He was on the ice a lot when Sidney Crosby was out there. Maybe not the best thing in the world.
And then he signed they pick him up and like 2 days later they gave him the 3-year deal or something but because of that track record that Snow had, just finding these guys, going back to like even P.A. Parento, those kind of pickups, I just was like, oh, he must see something in Taylor Beck that the rest of the league doesn't, and this guy's gonna just wait until this guy scores 20 and has like 14 assists for the Islanders in this upcoming season. And no, I can't believe he struck out here.
Yeah. Well, like Art said, he had a good season with Nashville. 62 games, 8 goals, 8 assists in 14-15. All right, those aren't great numbers, but they're like for a good team. Remember, Nashville was good back then. That was a bottom six role. He was able to chip in. That seems fine. Ended up getting traded by Nashville to the Leafs for Jamie Devane, and then he ends up in the Grabner trade. And yeah, I could see a little bit of upside there, but he eventually only played 2 games for the Islanders. 0 goals, 0 assists, 0 anything. Ironically, he would sign with the Rangers in 2017, or get traded to the Rangers, I should say, and have those same exact numbers, which is probably pretty rare. You know, there's not a ton of guys who played for both teams, and to have the same exact career, quote-unquote career numbers for both teams is probably even more rare. But he got 2 games early and that was it. So, I mean, Art, you were there. What do you remember of the Taylor Beck era of Islanders hockey when he shows up?
I think the hard part was that when that trade was made, like I said, it was made the middle of September. So it was kind of, you know, first week of training camp, basically. You're not going to be able to get a full evaluation of a guy bringing him in and having him just kind of like jump right in and be like, all right, now you're going to make our team. So I think that was part of the reason. It was just like, let's see what we got down the road. You know, they were coming off that 14-15 year. They had a pretty set top 9, top 12. You know, you think about Nikolai Kuhlman had been playing some first line. You know, they added guys like Steve Bernier. They were kind of a complete team. Mikhail Grabowski wasn't done as a player because of all the concussions. So I don't think they felt compelled to rush anybody. Yeah. You know, Beck was, how old was he? 23 that year. I think they felt like, all right, we can take our time with some of these guys. You know, you think about the guy that had the biggest impact that year was Christopher Gibson, because his most memorable moment as an Islander was being a net for the playoff clincher in Washington that year. So, you know, he was the guy that put up some decent numbers in Bridgeport that year. I'm just, you know, looking it up, you know, 909 save percentage, 19 wins. You know, in Bridgeport, that's an amazing total, really. Yeah. So, you know, and he would go on and, you know, a couple of years after that, when the Islanders needed a goalie, he had a few nice, you know, nice nights. I remember the game that he played in Calgary in the 17-18 year when he made, I think it was like 50-something saves for a win, when the team was just kind of in that 17-18 run of just not playing a lick of defense under Doug Waite. You know, and it didn't end up working out for him in the NHL, but he was, you know, he was serviceable, and it was kind of appropriate that it was such a strange trade that that none of these guys really panned out, but the guys that, in typical Islander fashion, after a couple of years when they kind of took their dip before Snow and Waite were fired and Lou came in and Barry Trotz came in, that by then, Michael Grabner was back to being the same guy he'd been in his early years as an Islander, but with the Rangers, which was the biggest dagger of all. And Carter Verhaeghe was on his way to just about having an NHL career. So, it was just kind of a, hearing about a giant trade like that in training camp, you're kind of a little bit confused. And then as you're kind of tracking the guys, eventually you're just like, this whole thing seems very strange and kind of low impact. But I think the goal was to just kind of throw some guys in Bridgeport, see if they could develop in a cup, you know, Gibson did a little bit. Taylor Beck got his quick cup of coffee. I think they decided quickly he wasn't worth it. Matt Finn fizzled out real fast. And and now we can talk about Carter Verhaeghe, who had some pretty good numbers in Bridgeport in his 2 years in the Islanders organization, but spent a lot of his time in the ECHL, which, you know, is pretty amazing to think about where he is now.
I kind of assumed that, because like you said before, like Verhaeghe wasn't just an Islanders mistake. Like, he was with the Lightning. They gave him some playing time. I think he was on one of those cup teams, I think. But they ultimately let him go, where he scored 42 goals with the Panthers last year. So, I mean, and obviously the Leafs had him at first. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that missed on Carter Verhaeghe to get to the point where he's at now. But I just kind of assumed that his numbers were sort of middling with the Islanders and they just didn't think much of it. But in looking back, I was like, wait a minute, he had 44 points in 75 games for the Sound Tigers. Like, that's pretty good. And then he had 58 points in 36 games for the Missouri Mavericks of the ECHL. That's really good. Like, so I don't know what the deal was. Like, do you remember any, I mean, he wasn't around obviously, but like, do you remember anybody saying anything at the team? Like, this guy's not that good. Like, was there something else?
Yeah, I remember talking to Brent Thompson a little bit, probably in one of the training camps in the subsequent year about him, because his numbers were noticeable and there was never really, he never got a sniff in terms of a call up or anything. And I think it was a lot of attention to detail away from the puck with him, that it was, there were consistent things. And I think that's kind of a theme, because we had, you know, Josh Hosang in this organization for a long time. It's a guy who had wondrous skill, but could never put the full, even, you know, you're a guy like that with that kind of creativity, and Carter Verhaeghe clearly has incredible scoring ability and has shown that at a lot of different levels. But so you don't have to be Patrice Bergeron without the puck. You just have to show a semblance of hockey IQ and know where to be. And I think it was a real struggle for Carter Verhaeghe. And I think he's talked about it, that he doesn't really put it on anybody other than himself, that going through three organizations and, you know, getting whatever it was, you know, 60% of a season in Tampa with a good team, but he was a fourth liner on that team.
Right.
Packed with good players, but he never really had a big impact with the Lightning, and they let him go as a free agent. He signs in Florida, immediately has an impact, basically a point per game guy in the COVID shortened season of 2021. And now he's looking in the last 2 years. It's a guy who's maybe the best clutch playoff scorer in the league right now. These last 2 years, what has he got? Four overtime winners or something like that. I mean, that's like a career.
Yeah.
I don't think any Islander in history, even the Stanley Cup teams, has four overtime winners in the playoffs. Maybe Bobby Nystrom is close.
Josh Bailey is.
I think Bossy might, but that's about it.
I think Nystrom might have four or five, and that's really that's about it. But so you know, everybody you want to blame. You know, I was funny. I was talking to Lou the other day, doing a piece on development, such a huge topic, and I haven't written a word of it yet because it's so ridiculous. I probably talked to 30 people, you get 30 different answers on what does development mean. And the first thing that he said to me was, you have to accept that you're going to make mistakes. And Carter Verhaeghe was a mistake by the Islanders and a mistake by the Lightning and a mistake by the Leafs.
Yeah.
And here he is. And everybody wants to point the finger that, like, you messed this up. You guys don't know how to develop forwards. And that may be true, but I don't think you can use him as an example of the Islanders messed up, because this guy just wasn't ready.
Yeah, it's true.
Yep. Yeah, it hurt seeing him and Christopher Gibson skate around with the Stanley Cup in the bubble. Did Gibson end up skating twice with it? I can't remember.
Hockey Reference is kind of funny because it does not have Gibson as a Cup winner. And I went back and looked at the bubble, and Curtis McElhinney was the backup for all of those games.
Yeah.
So if
his
name
is like that third goal, like taxi squad kind of thing going on.
Right. So I don't
and
know.
He definitely was on my TV with the Cup.
Okay.
He was in the COVID shortened season, the one that was played with fans.
Gotcha.
That was the one where he was the third goalie. So yeah, he was out there with the Cup in 21. Not he was still Islanders property in 2020.
Oh, okay. So there you go. Yeah, because Hockey Reference does not have the little one time Cup winner at the top of the thing there. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought he was there. So I was looking around. But yeah, so Verhaeghe, by the way, before we move on from him, the Islanders didn't get nothing for Verhaeghe. They traded him to the Lightning for goaltending legend Christer Gudzlevskis. Yep. Who had a pretty darn good season with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, and then that was it. And then he was gone too. So couldn't really turn the search for that elusive goaltending depth once again becomes a problem. But like you said before, Christopher Gibson was probably meant to sort of solve that problem. You know, rewinding a couple of seasons, because he was drafted in the second round by the Kings, and he did have some sort of promise with him. But he was always also an interesting story. Like, you wrote a whole article about him at the Athletic. Like, he's got a really interesting background. Christopher Gibson doesn't sound like a guy who grew up in Finland, but he is. And his family is of mixed race. And so, like, it was a really interesting case and like really should have been kind of a cool story. But as we'll find out, he only really had moments of kind of success with the Islanders. But I mean, what was that writing that story like with him? He's a pretty interesting dude. And from what I remember, pretty sharp too. Like, he was very smart when they let him talk, but we didn't hear much from him though. all that told.
Yeah. His background is fascinating. His mother's Finnish. So he grew up in Finland. His father was English and opened the first kickboxing gym in Finland. A black man from the UK in Finland, probably in a kickboxing gym. There's a lot of uniqueness to that. Sure. Met a Finnish woman. They got married and had him. So he also, you know, at first glance does not look Finnish. So you don't expect a very heavy Finnish accent from someone who looks like him, and super soft spoken and nice. And, you know, I remember talking to him during the COVID shutdown when the Black Lives Matter protests were coming up. And I was just curious to hear a little bit more about his life growing up as probably one of very few kids of color in Finland. And there were some struggles for him for sure. And he felt a little bit singled out at times, but he's just had a very interesting journey and kind of being a goalie. I think to him also, he maybe surprised some people as a very good youth goalie coming up wearing a mask. You suddenly take your mask off and people are taken aback a little bit at who they see behind the mask, especially in a place like Finland. So yeah, he's a thoughtful guy and interesting to talk to, and you know, still playing in the minors last year. I don't think he's anywhere this year, but
he had actually just gotten released by Dallas. He was with Dallas, and he was with Seattle last year, but he mainly played with Coachella Valley of the AHL. So I think he's one of the rare weird Islanders we've had here that is still playing somewhere, which is kind of weird. But he did have moments, and like, you know, it's funny because this is another guy who felt like he was an Islander for a lot longer than he was. He only ended up playing 16 games for them over the course of like three or four seasons. He had 4 wins, 5 losses, 3 overtime losses, which are very modest numbers, obviously. His most games played was 8 in the 2017-18 season, which, as you noted before, was completely defense optional. The poor guy, I wouldn't have put my worst enemy in goal for the Islanders that season because they were going to get lit up. No worry, no problem there. He ended up with 2 wins. I don't know how that happened. 3 losses, then 2 overtime losses. But what's funny is that if you look at his career and you know, you search him up on YouTube or something like that, you will find these moments where he was just on one. And there was a time when he made 32 saves in Washington, as you mentioned before, in 2016, got the Islanders the clinching victory they needed in overtime to make the playoffs. And I remember watching this game. I remember going into that game thinking, this is a disaster. Like, only the Islanders would go into a playoff clinching game with a rookie goalie in their third string goalie in net because everybody else is hurt. But they walked out with an overtime win in a place where they didn't win that often.
Tavares closing in. Franz Nielsen with him on the toe drag, not fooling Niskanen just yet. Turnover! Breakaway waltz! Kuznetsov's in. Fires! Pad save Gibson!
What a great save. That's his 9th shot of the game for Kuzi. He's had a ton of scoring chances. That's his 5th scoring chance of this hockey game. And obviously the best, a breakaway from their blue line.
He kept that one simple. He chose not to deke, and the young goalie made the save. Kuznetsov gets another chance here. A button hook out of the corner. Overlapping, it's John Carlson. Carlson, who had an OT winner in New Jersey recently. Johansson steps right on in. Backhand denied. Gibson, another huge save as Hickey was hit up high. Thomas Hickey is sprinting to the bench, clutching at his face.
It was pretty wild. And then he kind of just immediately disappeared. It felt like, you know, maybe this is the start of the Chris Gibson era. And that era never materialized. But that was a pretty wild one. I mean, Mike, surely you remember this monumental game. That was Thomas Hickey in overtime. Yeah. After taking a big hit. It was the whole thing.
Yeah, it's part of that catalog, Dan, that we've talked about a bit of that's been spoiled.
Yes.
By one particular player. Because that particular player on that goal, I remember it perfectly, made a great play. It was a rebound off of Braden Holtby or like a rush. And the 99 times out of 100, the puck being on this player's stick, that puck's going right back on net. but he made a really, really, really deft pass against traffic, kind of like curled his stick around a couple guys and found Hickey and scored. And it was a great play, and it was the type of play that you're like, it made you so happy that this guy was an Islander. And now it's just ruined. But Christopher Gibson is the story of that game, I guess, and not my ill will towards John Tavares. This is about Gibson, and he made a couple saves in overtime. I think he stopped Kuznetsov on a breakaway in that overtime.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
I remember Joe Beninati being, you know, I like Joe Beninati. But I can't remember what his partner's name is. He's got like
Craig Laughlin. Beninati's good. Laughlin, not so much.
Yeah, a little bit of like a shrilly voice.
Yes.
And you could tell that they all just expected Kuznetsov to score on that. And he's like, Laughlin's just like, Jesus Christ, like Chris Gibson just stopped this guy? Like, who is this guy?
Laughlin sounds like the wacky neighbor on the worst Canadian sitcom you've ever seen. It's just the worst. I hate him. But Beninati is good. That was huge. That was a wild game and a wild overtime. And yeah, to have Christopher Gibson take the win there was absurd. And then they went to the playoffs and lost to the that was the Panthers year. Never mind. Yes. That was 2016. Yes. But then, you know, again, he just disappears for a while and he resurfaces a couple of years later because he's been playing in Bridgeport this whole time. And again, everybody's hurt. And again, he gets pressed into service. And in Calgary, he makes 50 saves in a win, 5-2 win.
Back they come. Here's Gaudreau. Into Bennett. Bennett makes the move. Stopped by Gibson. Looks behind him, and he's able to cover up. Monahan, good play to get the puck over the line. chases it down low with a pass out front. Great save by Gibson off Gaudreau. Wow. Johnny Gaudreau, point blank. Gibson somehow got the right pad on that one. Bouncing puck. Christopher Gibson's been very good. Here's Lee with the empty net. And he'll score as Anders Lee gets his second of the game, 33rd of the season.
50 saves. He becomes the second, I guess he was still a rookie, but he became the second rookie since Billy Smith to have 50 saves in a game for the Islanders, because again, the 72 Islanders and the 2018 Islanders both had no defense whatsoever. Talking pre-Dennis Podvan and then post everybody else, you know? But that was a wild one too, that I was just reminded of. Oh my God, how is this possible? And then he made 37 saves in a win over at Pittsburgh a couple of weeks later. So like, this guy had moments where you thought, man, this is going to be great. But then he always followed them up with kind of a, you know, fall apart game, or he just didn't work out. So
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
You talk to him, Art, like, I mean, was Gibson, like, as a player, I mean, was he kind of an optimistic guy? Did, you know, was he kind of the goalie you didn't want to talk to or couldn't talk to before a game? Or was he, you know, did he have a good head on his shoulders, even with these kinds of, like, this kind of inconsistency that always seemed to plague him all the time?
Yeah, you know, that stretch when he got called up, that was, I think, you know, in addition to all the other failings of that year and now how it's looked back that, you know, new ownership, or then the new ownership of Scott Malkin and John Ledecky decided to keep Garth Snow and hire Doug Weight as the permanent head coach, partly in the hopes of keeping John Tavares. The constant meetings between Scott Malkin and Pat Brisson that kind of pushed Garth Snow out of the way in terms of talking about the plans for the future with Tavares, that were kind of at odds with how terrible they were after a pretty good start. And obviously they had Matthew Barzal and things were very exciting in that year at times. But by the end, by March, when they routinely just could not get out of their own way in their defensive zone, Thomas Greiss, who was coming off a big extension that he'd gotten the year before, was pretty much unusable that year, had an 890 save percentage. Yara Halak, who had been demoted the previous year for a couple of months, resurfaced as the number one goalie. And then Greiss got hurt and Gibson came up. And I think Doug Weight was like, well, whatever, we'll just give this guy a try. And if you think about his first five appearances that year in like a two and a half week stretch in March, he loses in overtime in Pittsburgh in a 50 shot game, 47 saves. Sidney Crosby scores in overtime. Next 5 days later, in Edmonton, 35 saves and one goal allowed to Connor McDavid, and they lose in a shootout. A couple nights later in Calgary, 50 saves, and they somehow win. Four nights later, he comes in relief, and or maybe he started that one against Washington at home and gives up five, and like he got pulled, so Alex Ovechkin. And then again, faces Pittsburgh and gives up one to Sid, 36 saves. He's all over the place. He was always a very even keel guy. I mean, I definitely he was more Grice than Halak in terms of his temperament. So, but I think he was just, you know, he was kind of a positive guy, and he was trying to, you know, establish himself, and to have to try to do it in that scenario where there was no structure, there was no system. It had been no system for months in that year, and then just complete failure. You know, we were just past the trade deadline. Tavares wasn't traded as he should have been. A lot of blame to go around. Billboards, the whole deal. It was just like, imagine you're, and he's 25, so he's not a complete kid, but this is really your first opportunity to be an NHLer, and that's what you got to deal with. I think it was a lot to ask of him to really establish himself. And obviously in that organization, you know, the things changed pretty drastically that summer, obviously with the front office moves and the coaching moves. And then, you know, he came to camp and Robin Leonard was there as a reclamation project, and Grice was still there. So he was the pretty clear number three. And I don't know that anybody could have conceived of the year that Robin Leonard had. So suddenly it was like, here's an opportunity for him to maybe get some more games, get a little more experience. And this guy has come up from out of nowhere, literally from the brink of self-destruction to share the Jennings Trophy. It was, great for the organization, not so great for Christopher Gibson. But he ended up carrying the Stanley Cup around the ice a couple years later. So I guess it wasn't all bad. But as far as his Islanders career goes, that 2 week stretch, I just remember, being in the airport in Calgary the next morning and thinking, like, what did I just see? I've seen some weird games in that Saddle Dome over the years. Yeah. But that one was one of the few positive weird ones for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching it on YouTube and I was like, oh my God, I remember watching this game and still being like, this is insane. And then I had removed it from my memory and now it's coming back. And I'm like, but what's weird is that like the Islanders won 5-2, but they might have not even had 25 shots in that game. Like it was just a bad game for whoever was in goal for the Flames, and a great game for Chris Gibson. I think there was a game in San Jose too, where they like got outshot by 3-1 or whatever and still won. So it was a little bit crazy, but like you said, after, you know, that season, all the changes happened and he, I guess, wasn't brought back by the Islanders. And then he started the tour. He signed with Tampa Bay, won at least one or two cups there, or as the backup, you know, the back to the backup. He signed with Florida. He had a PTO with Arizona. He signed with Seattle last year. Again, played mostly in Coachella Valley, who went to the Calder Cup Finals. But again, he was the third stringer. Even in the AHL, he was the third stringer because Chris Driedger and Joey Decord were the basically the tandem back then. Last year for Coachella Valley, and now he was apparently signed by Dallas and then released. So it's been quite a journey for him, but he's still out there, and you know, you never know if he's gonna pop up again. I mean, you know, it's not like the Islanders have a ton of goaltending depth. I wonder if they've given him a call. Hey man, you want to come on back to Bridgeport? We could really use you. That'd be kind of funny. But yeah, it's this trade, you know, when you think about a guy getting traded for four other guys, you think, wow, that's a monumental trade. But in looking back, this was anything but a monumental trade for not just for the Islanders, but for the Leafs too. Like, I mean, they got one season of kind of a hobbled Grabner and that was it. Right. So it's not like anybody made out on this deal, except maybe Carter Verhaeghe 5 years later. Like, it's just kind of a weird, I guess, Chris Gibson maybe, but it's just a funny trade that, you know, these six people were moved in this one deal and nobody made out better afterwards.
it just should have never happened.
Right. Yes.
Basically didn't ever happen. A six person trade that just got sucked into the ether.
Right. Well, it's funny because Taylor Beck, you know, we've covered a lot of eras in this series, but like, I think Taylor Beck, of a guy who's played recently, I mean, you know, it was only 6 years ago, I think he has the least written about him as an Islander. Like, there's literally nothing. It's almost like he never existed here. Like, he played two games and that was it. He was part of this trade, played two games, meaningless, and that was it. And so it was kind of funny, like, kind of doing research about him, and there's nothing there. Like, there's, I found one article on him that maybe he could take a spot, and well, he didn't. So that was the end of that. But it's just such a rare monster trade that amounted to absolutely nothing. It's just, again, Chris Gibson got a career out of it, I guess. He got some career highlights, but you know, Carter Verhaeghe can look back at this and be like, oh yeah, that's right, I did get traded with three other guys, nobody else.
And Beck, I do remember Beck wore he wore number 56. So that is not a number that we talked on the last Islanders Anxiety about how the number 16 has been cursed.
Mm.
56, there are some luminaries, including Dustin Cohn, John Persson. I had some pretty high hopes for him, obviously. Welcome back, Tanner Fritz.
Oh, wow.
Big A, Double A. AHL leading goal scorer last year. Andy Andreoff apparently wore number 56. I don't believe that at all. William Dufour. And I don't think I believe that either. So the Hockey Reference looks like it's misleading me here. Didn't Dufour wear number 14 last year? So maybe they're counting preseason games. But Andreoff, he did not wear number 56.
That had to be preseason, I guess.
Yeah, this is all jacked up, but yeah, so like Dustin Cohn, it's really, really a tough group of players that Taylor Beck is fighting for here. He actually might be the best of all people who wore 56.
He didn't do anything good, but he didn't really do anything bad either. So congratulations, Taylor Beck.
I'll tell a quick personal anecdote.
Sure.
That was part of this trade. At the end of that 14-15 season, Grabner only played a few of those playoff games in the first round series against Washington because he was clearly hurt. And he had given an interview to an Austrian, maybe to the Austrian version of NHL.com, where he said in German that he needed surgery. And I remember someone sent it to me, or I found it, did a Google search. So I went to Garth Snow and I said, is this true? And he kind of gave me a look that said, I think so, but what the heck is he doing telling anybody? We're in the middle of the playoffs. So I wrote something about it, obviously, because it seemed relevant. And at breakup day, Michael Grabner confronted me and said, why did you do that? And I said, well, it's not like I found out about it secretly. Like, it was in a news report
right
elsewhere, just in a different language. Like, you know, we can translate these things.
Sure.
And I wasn't trying to be condescending. I was just kind of explaining, like, this was already out there. I was just sort of taking something that had been out there already. And we got into it a little bit, which, you know, has happened lots of times, and agree to disagree. And he leaves for the off season and we come back in training camp and he's not happy to see me and we haven't talked very much. And then he gets traded. And I remember going to Toronto with the Islanders that 15-16 season, and his locker was right next to P.A. Parento's. That was P.A. Parento's 1 year in Toronto. And P.A. is a longtime favorite of mine, a terrific guy. And I should add now, many years later, I love Michael Grabner too. He did co-hosted episodes of No Sleep Till Brooklyn. You know, he's a fantastic dude. We were not seeing eye to eye then. So it's midway through the year, the next year, and the Islanders are doing well. The Leafs are not doing that well. And I go into the Leafs room, as you do when you're up there, and talk to PA a little bit. And Grabner came off the ice and sat down. And I think PA said something like, oh, look, it's Staple. And Grabner just kind of looked me up and down. I was like, big deal, and walked away. And so I was like, well, I guess. And then PA just kind of gave me a look like, what's going on there?
Right.
I was like, it's a long story. Apparently he's not over it yet. Several months later.
Wow.
And then, you know, he leaves the Leafs and signs with the Rangers,
right,
completely resurrects his career. And as happens a lot of the time, he was having a terrible time in Toronto. I think they were a bad team. He wasn't producing at all. I think it was in his head, and he becomes a much better player with the Rangers. I end up doing a little bit of coverage during the playoffs. Great to talk to him. I remember catching up with him when he came through with Arizona, and then when he retired, became, you know, we text occasionally, talk about hockey, whatever, talk about family. So, you know, you go through these phases with guys that you cover when things are not going well for them, or they're not thrilled to see you or talk to you. And then when things are going better, things are better. So it was a funny, I just remember that encounter in the Leafs locker room. That was like, well, I guess I did something wrong here, but it's not the first time it's happened. And I'm sure, if Grabs and I were talking about it, I don't know if we ever did talk about it, but clearly it's something that's in the past. And that was kind of a low point in my relationship with him. Not that that was the high priority at the time, but it was probably a low point for him professionally too. And what a weird situation to resurrect it with the Rangers. He was one of their, I think it was him and Mika Zibanejad that basically carried them through that 2017 playoffs. He scored 4 goals for them that year. He was scoring on breakaways, doing all the things that people used to get so upset with him about not doing in his later years with the Islanders. And I believe he is the only NHL player to have 2 20-goal seasons with both the Islanders and Rangers, which I don't think is going to be a record or an achievement that's ever going to be duplicated. So that'll be his New York hockey legacy, that he had the best multiple seasons with each team.
Wow. How about that? I didn't know that.
Was that was the series where Chris Kreider ran to Carey Price, right? Price.
That was when the Rangers were on their way to the finals. That was a couple of years earlier. They just beat the Canadians in the first round and then lost to the Senators, which
J.G. Pageau.
The J.G. Pageau series, okay.
4-goal J.G.
Pageau. 4-goal game, that was, man. What a hero.
Man, it all comes back around. So funny that now he's an Islander. How about that? And now you are back with the Islanders, and that is the perfect way to wrap this whole thing up with that fantastic story. So, again, by the time this comes out, you may not be on this beat anymore, and you may be back covering the Rangers. Maybe somebody else is covering the Islanders. But I mean, I guess you lived in this and have, and you might go back to this sort of netherworld where you cover the Rangers, but you're still so well known to Islanders fans. Like, how have they treated you sort of since you've gone to the Rangers, and how have Rangers fans treated you? Since, you know, you've covered the Islanders for so long, I mean, we're all assholes. Like, we all get it. But, like, hopefully it's been as smooth a ride as it could possibly be for you.
You know, I think after almost 10 years of covering the Islanders, you find your level. You know, you find the people that you like to interact with.
Right.
You kind of weed out the people that are you know, knee-jerk critical or just kind of want to fight about your coverage. And try not to take it personally, which took me a long time to be able to do. And, you know, making the transition to the Athletic 6 years ago and essentially bringing the audience that liked me over there to kind of build the Islanders fan base, subscriber base there was great. You know, it's like any place. Once it starts to grow, you get commenters that are not in your inner circle, and, you know, people want to argue or whatever, it's fine. But it definitely, you know, I think over the years I kind of curated a pretty decent sized group of Islander fans who are insane because it's just the default setting, but also endearing. And it's, you know, as I mentioned kind of at the top, it's just a very different environment being around the Islanders versus being around the Rangers, you know, and also coming into the Rangers during a year when the locker room wasn't open. A year when Rick Carpinello, kind of our original Rangers writer, retired a couple months into the season. So I'm inheriting his audience and his style of doing things, which is very different than mine, even though he's been a mentor and a friend to me for, you know, almost 30 years. You know, and the Rangers have a very established group of media. They have a different kind of ship that they run there. So it's just different, and it's a very different fan base. I think Ranger fans, and I'm sure Islander fans would say it's unearned, but there's a lot of confidence in the interactions that they have with some of the writers and some of the feelings they have about the team, where I think the Islander fans on the whole are happy to have coverage as opposed to being more critical of the coverage they get. It's not universal, but it's just sort of the tendency, the way that I see it. So, you know, and it's been good. You know, I had I went from consecutive Islander Conference final runs to a Ranger Conference final run, and I've covered a lot more success in the last few years between both teams than I think I ever thought I would see. Because I started out my hockey writing career at Newsday in 2001 with three of the worst, most overpaid Ranger teams in the history of the NHL. So, you know, it's been an interesting transition. And I always said covering the Islanders when they started to get good, just kind of as the Rangers were ending their kind of run of division and conference dominance for that 3 or 4 year span between 2012 and 2016, that it would be so good if they were both good at the same time. And I think we're close now. I don't think that they're both elite where they're going to meet in the first or second round, but it's nice. It feels like the rivalry is kind of even. You know, I've got a story that I'm working on that's going to come out Thursday on the longtime friendship between Ilya Sorokin and Igor Shesterkin, who, you know, I've been wanting to do it for a long time, but now that I have to bounce back and forth, it was great to talk to both guys. They're super close friends. I think it's fascinating that two of the best goalies in the league who played for rival teams in the KHL are again playing for rival teams here. And, you know, they're two guys that trained together in the summer down in Florida. It's a lot of intertwining with teams that are that close, and especially guys, the core guys on both teams that have been around a long time that you don't really see not as much hatred just because they haven't played in the playoffs. So it feels like the Islanders' main rivals and the Rangers' main rivals are maybe similar teams, but they are not each other right now. Yeah. And for sure. I would love for it to get back to that level of hatred, but I think I'll be doing this for a while. You know, I don't know how happy fans of either team will be, but this is the reality that we live in now, as the Athletic kind of transitions to a different phase of hockey coverage where we're not quite as intense on the day-to-day side of things. But it's been fun. It's been, you know, to sit down with Matthew Barzal again, who I've always liked talking to over the years since he came in as a, you know, he was a 19-year-old way back in the day, and he has a lot of interesting things to say, and you just sort of miss it. Or, you know, catching up with guys who had none or, you know, one kid or two kids a few years ago and now have three, or it's life. It's kind of, you know, it's like seeing some old friends again. So that part is nice. And I think there's a lot of good guys in the Rangers room too. A lot of funny guys, and it's good. It's good to be able to bounce back and forth. They don't get quite as sick of you if you're not there for a couple of days.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I can tell you that we are happy that you are back covering the Islanders. That much is for sure. And the hell with everybody else, because we love having you cover the Islanders, and we hope it continues for a very long time. Not that everybody doesn't know already, but where can everybody find your work? Obviously at Athletic, but what's your Twitter account in case anybody had unfollowed you when you started covering the Rangers?
Still Stape Athletic on Twitter, whatever it's called these days. I am on Blue Sky. It's Art Stape dot B Sky or whatever it is. I don't even know what the handles are there. Doing my best to post on there. It's not quite as not quite as combative or exciting as even the dismantled Twitter is, but. But yeah, they're basically the Athletic. If, you know, we have cheap signups, probably worth it for, you know, as much Islanders coverage as I can give. And Rangers coverage, always welcome to have Islander fans come in the comments and stir stuff up. So,
yes. And if everybody wants to sign up, go for it. Do it. Just be prepared for lots and lots and lots of Leafs coverage as well. So if you can handle it,
definitely
go for it. You also get art on top of that. So it's a great deal. But we thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and we will get you on again at some point so we can talk about the man we have completely forgotten about in this entire conversation, the man who the Islanders received in trade for Taylor Beck, Marc-Andre Cliche. There you go. Defenseman from Colorado. But no, this is, I can't believe I completely forgot about it. But no, this has been great, Art. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Sign up at patreon.com/islandersanxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our theme song is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Find more of his work on Spotify and at Bandcamp. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. Shop Vintage Ice Hockey. Buy wines from the Pinot Project. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski, read his work, and listen to his work in Action Network. Any final thoughts on Taylor Beck, Christopher Gibson, maybe, who are these other guys? Tom Nilsson, Matt Finn, Carter Verhaeghe, or Michael Grabner, and the trade that seemed like a big deal and never was?
I love when it seems like the Islanders, especially back in this era, when they were operating on a shoestring budget, were up to something, or it looked like they were up to something, whether that was with player personnel or changing the color of the dragon mascot from that was the Arena Football League team to the Islanders colors just to save a few bucks. That kind of stuff always sticks with me. And this trade felt like that, like the Islanders. I don't know if I've ever seen a trade that looked like money laundering, but this was it. And I'm really happy it happened, even though at the same time, it felt like it never did.
Well put. That's the only best way to put it. Check out more of Fans First Sports Network at fansfirstsports.com. And thanks for listening. And we will talk to you again in a few weeks with another Weird Islander. And until then, keep the Islanders weird. All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.